The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, we'll go ahead. We sort of, four and a half minutes seems to be the time lag for one else. So I'm Professor Paul Williams, and this is Martina, and others will probably roll on in, I suspect, over the next few minutes. And we're going to talk to you about the Public International Law and Policy Program, which is essentially a global pro bono law firm. And it operates in partnership with American University and then PILPG, which has offices in Washington, Amsterdam, New York, and then we have currently about five or six overseas offices in Nepal, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Southern Sudan, and Darfur. Doha, actually, nicer than Darfur. So we're working on the Darfur peace talks, but doing it out of the Movenpick and the Sheraton hotels in Doha. What PILPG does, the brochure is for PILPG, and we essentially have mirrored the Public International and Policy Group, a global pro bono law firm. We've mirrored that structure within the Washington College of Law. We've also connected it to the School of International Service on the main campus as well. And it's an opportunity for students to involve themselves in providing pro bono legal advice on either negotiating peace agreements, drafting post-conflict constitutions, or engaging in war crimes issues. And Martina will talk with you in a few minutes. She heads up our Uganda program, where she's been helping the Ugandan government set up a system domestically to prosecute members of the Lord's Resistance Army, which have been indicted or are indictable by the International Criminal Court. It's under the system of complementarity. So we have a team of people in Uganda, and then the team here at American University, and then some others from our Dutch office and our DC office, which travel out to Uganda to do work for the government. PILPG operates as a global pro bono law firm, so we're based around the globe. We have the offices I mentioned. We've also had offices in the past in Iraq, Sri Lanka, and in Kosovo, and we're opening some new offices in Bosnia and Kosovo in the coming couple of months. We pick sides, and so in the Darfur peace talks, PILPG represents the Darfuris. So we represent the three main rebel movements as well as civil society. Matt Simpson, who's an alumni of the program and then was at the law firm of Weil Gotshal and is now full-time with PILPG, he and I are the only two non-Darfurians who are official members of the Darfur delegation. So we have our little delegation passes, and we go with the delegation, and we serve as their lawyers in the negotiations in Doha. In Southern Sudan, we're representing the government of Southern Sudan on the referendum. And many of you probably know there's a referendum this week on self-determination for Southern Sudan becoming independent. We have a team of three people there in Juba, and we've helped draft the referendum law. We've dealt with a lot of the issues relating to the timing of the law, and now we're working with them on state succession, what happens to membership in the UN, debts, assets, treaties, as well as we're sending someone out there. She left this morning to fly out there to brief them on recognition. It looks like the referendum is overwhelmingly in favor of independence, so how do you now structure a seeking international recognition and the establishment of diplomatic relations? In Sri Lanka, we worked for the government of Sri Lanka on the peace process. In Nepal, we have an office which will be closing down in a couple of months, but we've been working on the constitution there, advising the five main political parties on drafting the post-conflict constitution. All of these overseas projects and all of the clients are mirrored with teams of students at American University. And so there will be a team of six or seven 2L students, which are called research associates, and then you're teamed up with two 3L students who are senior research associates, and then you're teamed up with the chiefs of party who are deployed overseas and the project directors who are essentially partners or at the partner level if they were at a law firm downtown to pull together the work product and to get it out into the field. The organization itself has done about two dozen peace negotiations and post-conflict constitutions. I started the organization when I was a member of the Bosnian delegation at the Dayton Peace Accords, and then it continued to grow through the Kosovo Peace Accords, the Key West negotiations between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And then it really took off when we were doing the Iraqi constitution. We opened an office in Baghdad, and we're working with the Iraqis on the development of their new constitution. Nearly all of the staff of PILPG are former WCL alumni. The team we have in Juba and Southern Sudan, all three of them are former WCL. Our team, which is coming back, one of them is he's back now at the State Department already. He picked up a job there. The other one, Jocelyn Rafferty, one of the former senior research associates from WCL as well. So there's a link between the students and plus the, those that are working in the field. They know WCL, they know the program. Many of them participated in the program while they were here at the school. We run it six credits in the fall, six in the spring. It's a pretty competitive application process. We can talk about that. We are probably one of the most sought after and applied for programs within WCL and also within the master's program up at the School of International Service. Let me pass it to Martina for a few minutes and then we'll throw it open to questions. We're a little bit out of the box when it comes to a program here at the law school, so I'll let you sort of direct the Q&A in the best way that can sort of help you guys get your heads around running a global pro bono law firm out of the law school.
Great. So I'm Martina. I'm a senior research associate on the Uganda, Southern Cameroon, and Kosovo team. I think what's the most unique aspect about participating in the Public International Law and Policy program is that basically your work changes day to day. It really depends on what your clients' needs are and what's next for them. So as a senior research associate, I have had the opportunity to work with our in-country chief of party who is in contact with our client every day, and that kind of directs our workflow. So we have worked on the practical everyday issues to the more theoretical issues. So in Uganda, as you know, and as Paul mentioned, they are setting up the high court to prosecute members of former members of the LRA and anybody else who has participated in war crimes, genocide, and crimes of humanity against humanity. So it's kind of taking aspects of international law, but they have also passed their own domestic legislation. So we analyze a lot of those international laws, especially under the Geneva Convention. But we're also more forward-thinking in seeing once these indictments are handed down and they go to trial, what is the process going to be during trial? So where's the court going to be? I mean, very logistical things to what are they going to, what counts are they going to be held or charged for? And then you think even further ahead to, for example, what kinds of reparations victims might be seeking or other truth-telling mechanisms to kind of give a holistic idea of this transitional justice that they're attempting in Uganda. So that's the Ugandan client. We also work with the Southern Cameroonians, which is, they are a small group in the northwestern province of Southern Cameroon, and they are primarily English-speaking. They have always claimed that they were annexed into what is now the Republic of Cameroon. So they have been seeking self-determination in a variety of different international bodies. They also have various human rights grievances since they have been traditionally discriminated against since they are the only English-speaking region in a French-speaking country. We also have an exciting new project with Kosovo. It's primarily focused on rule of law and outreach and transitional justice mechanisms, or sorry, not transitional justice, transparency of the judiciary. So we will see how that develops. It's a very new project. So yeah, I'm open to any questions, but it's a very exciting program. I think one of the things that I've learned most is kind of to be quick on my feet and also to be an excellent writer. You basically are writing memos and these memos are going directly to the client and they're reading them and they're really taking it to heart and it can influence policy and all the different things that they're working towards. So if you have any questions, let me know.
You guys have questions on this or, yeah?
So when you said the six credits in the fall and
It's a one-year-long program, and then some students will be then selected out of that to be senior research associates for the second year. And it's a combination of six units at the law school and six units at the School of International Service. All law students can take six units of main campus work, so we make use of that opportunity to bring in the six units from main campus. I have a joint appointment at the law school and the School of International Service, hence that bridge. It also gives us the opportunity to bring in the master students and others. Yeah, so it'll fill two requirements in the fall and two in the spring. And the requirements are advanced international law. So on your resume or on the transcript, it shows up as my advanced international law peace building course. Yes?
How's it work if you're a JDMA student?
Yeah, it was designed initially out of the JDMA program. And then under pressure from both of the deans at SIS and WCL, I expanded the JDs, the MAs, and then the LLMs as well. So it fits in very nicely with the JDMA program. And we've been increasingly creating opportunities for that last semester. JDMAs do 3.5 years, and it's the last semester. Because of the office downtown, we had 3 JDMA students do work as law fellows down there. So they were able to roll out of the 3 years of the law school, and then that last semester register for credit to be law fellows. We had a transitional justice in East Africa and a water diplomacy fellow. But it fits in very nicely with those requirements.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. The Darfur team is currently drafting a ceasefire. The GEM, the Justice and Equality Movement, one of the Darfur rebel groups in Doha, has been asked to sign a ceasefire. And so they rang back, and Matt Simpson, who was the project director, got together with his team, and they spent most of the last week building from scratch a ceasefire. Now, PLPG has a ceasefire template. We've done ceasefires before, so we brought in people to work with them on that. But they've been doing the detailed work in putting that together. They also did a red line version of the peace agreement. About 2 weeks ago, the mediators handed our clients, the rebels, a peace agreement and came right back to the team. And then the team has been going through it and doing legal analysis. Is this a peace agreement? Does it say what the clients wanted to say? Does it say it in such a way that it's binding, that it's clear, that it won't be misinterpreted or utilized? We went over to the World Bank yesterday to meet with the World Bank to talk about how does one design a development bank for Darfur. The Qataris have promised a development bank, but no one really knows what does a development bank do, because the Qataris have never done it before. So we've got the team involved in thinking through how does one do a development bank. So this, because Darfur is sort of on my mind at the moment, those are some of the very specific things. It's all legal work, legal policy. It all goes to the client. There is no make work. There is no, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we knew this, or hey, let's have some students do some research. It's all legal product that goes directly to the client, which is why I mentioned earlier we pick sides, we have clients, we're always sitting on someone's team. Now, we were just talking before we came in about the case that's coming up in Uganda for the first detainee. And we want to talk about some of the things they're doing.
Sure.
With your team on that.
So the Coelho indictment is the first individual to be indicted by the War Crimes Division in Uganda. The trial is set to begin January 31st. So since the indictment was just made public, we're kind of analyzing the different legal elements. So he's been the internationality element. They say it's an international armed conflict, so we analyzed that. He's been charged with hostage taking, with destruction of property, and also willful killing. So we're analyzing all those elements under international law.
And the way that we're able to do this is we don't pitch it as Professor Williams and some of his students giving away free legal advice. It's research associates and senior research associates working for a global pro bono law firm, which has briefcases on the ground, lawyers in the field, lawyers as part of the delegation. And that's how your work product, how the assignments are able to come through and the legal taskings are able to come through directly from the field, and then how your work product goes quickly right back out into the field. We give all research associates business cards, so you'll be a research associate at the Public International Law and Policy Group. So when you're downtown and when you're at meetings or even when you're registering for meetings, you're doing it as a research associate with the Public International Law and Policy Group, as opposed to a student at American University or a student at some other university. And that gives you that entree, oftentimes, to move to the front of the line in that intellectual engagement with your peer community downtown.
How many students do you take? And then also, what are the main qualifications? We
look for a diverse pool of qualifications because we have such an eclectic array of clients, such an eclectic need. We take about 35 students. We have about 100 applications. We interview about 50, and we take about 35. So it's pretty competitive. We also bring in every semester 4 or 5 foreign legal specialists, which are LLM students. And then we have a handful of spots as well that we keep open for the master students. We are not looking for anything in particular. We're looking for really smart people who can write, and then from there it goes in every different direction. I don't say language capability, because then, you know, we hire three or four that have amazing language capability, and we have three or four who have no language capability beyond English. We have a couple who've had overseas experience, a few that have had experience 3 or 4 or 5 years before they've come to school, some who've gone straight through. And so actually we have our class meets once every other week to do a professional development for an hour and a half, and we meet in this class, and when I sort of think about on Tuesday, looking at the class, it's a very eclectic mix of people. Because we need that in order to service the needs of our clients.
I think the one thing that makes everybody, the one common characteristic is that everybody's very involved and interested in the work. They have a passion for the work. So, and that always comes through in the application. So I would encourage you.
One of the things we do is we put a lot of energy into the PILPG network. We probably have about 1,200 people at the moment in PILPG's network, and we put a lot of energy into connecting the students and the graduating students with that network. We have a number of alumni who are in the Presidential Management Fellowship Program with the U.S. government, a number of them at the Department of Defense, the State Department, a few on Capitol Hill, a number of them at law firms. 10 of the top 15 law firms worldwide do pro bono work for PILPG, because we are a 501c3 nonprofit. Sullivan and Cromwell, Sherman and Sterling, Wilmer Hale, Covington and Burling, Baker McKenzie, Steptoe and Johnson, Oreck, Jones Day, all do pro bono work for PILPG. And we have about 500 lawyers in that network of lawyers at those firms who've done work with us. Some of them travel. Covington will deploy a team every few months to Tanzania to do the work that we're doing there on human rights in cooperation with our chief of party. But they cover everything and get their lawyers out in the field to do training programs with us. Baker has been with us in southern Sudan and in Nepal. And so we have a deep relationship with firms, the U.S. government, because of our alumni and others. And we do a lot of work connecting you all into that network of foreign policy professionals. So we're looking for that type of commitment to a commitment to doing interesting things and thinking one of them might be public international law, peace talks, or war crimes. We work for all of the war crimes tribunals, starting with Yugoslavia. Justice Goldstone, the former prosecutor, is co-chairman of our advisory board. We've done Rwanda, Sierra Leone, ICC, Iraqi tribunal. And now we're doing work on the Lebanon tribunal as well, and the Cambodia tribunal, and Uganda domestic tribunal. So we're well connected into the tribunal field. We do most of the war crimes work out of, we have a program at Case Western as well, and we run it out of that program, although we do the Ugandan work out of our WCL office.
I won't give it up.
Yeah, I know. It's too much fun. Other questions about how the program operates, how we pick our clients? We have a diverse array of clients, governments, as well as self-determination movements. Three L years are. We also hire out of the 3L community as well. I only emphasize 2L since I think you guys are all 1Ls, right? Yeah. But the idea is because it's it's probably 80% of the research associates are 2Ls, and then there's a small smattering of 3Ls. The idea is that we bring in a group of the 2Ls, and then that's also the training pool for the senior research associates that do with the third year, and that's why we have that sort of come in as a 2L and then the 3L. Also, because of the way in which we talked earlier about the JDMA coming down to the downtown office as a law fellow, and then we're trying to find ways of getting more field opportunities for recent alumni out in the field, we want someone to have that length of training with the program. And because when you roll out, saying you were a research associate or a senior research associate at the Public International Law and Policy Group, because we've been doing this for a decade, and there are so many PILPGers downtown, when you say that, they think you've been intensively engaged in doing this type of work, and they treat you that way and give you that type of credit when they're going through the interview process. So it's very intensive. It's a very intensive engagement, but it's very, because it is drafting ceasefires, analyzing the elements of a crime, there's a need for that intensity. Yeah.
I'm a little bit confused. Some of your material seems to focus on countries that are in conflict or just post-conflict, like recently, while other stuff seems to focus on building up, I don't know what the word is, but countries that aren't actually in conflict or have been in conflict, but just helping out their institutions, strengthening their institutions. What is the focus? Is it post-conflict and conflict?
It's currently conflict and post-conflict. It's peace negotiations. We have the three primary practice areas of peace negotiations, post-conflict constitutions, and the prosecution of war crimes. We also have a water diplomacy practice area, since many of our clients have been trying to help them sort out resolving conflict or avoiding conflict over water courses and water basins. We used to have a public international law practice group, which is where we have some of the clients, for instance, Estonia, where we did the territorial dispute with Russia, we did Poland, we did some environmental issues, South Africa, some environmental. Those are from our former public international law practice group. But as we've sort of formed this niche of peace agreements, post-conflict constitutions, and war crimes prosecutions, the really fun stuff, we've been able to make a go of just doing that. I think all of our current clients are in those three practice areas. Yeah.
So how do you get your clients?
We get our clients old-fashioned way. It's mostly through word of mouth. We have a very strict, because it's pro bono, we try to pick the guys, clients on the right-hand side and on the good side of these issues, but we do both governments and self-determination. So we work for the government of Georgia, vis-a-vis Abkhazia and South Ossetia. We work for the government of Nepal, the government of Iraq, but also Montenegro, Kosovo, Bosnia, other self-determination movements. So we don't have a particular agenda. It's not about self-determination. It's not about sovereignty. It's not about international environmental protection. It's about promoting the rule of law and bringing about the resolution of conflict or post-conflict stability through promoting the rule of law. So our Kosovo work is rule of law, human rights protections. Our Bosnia work will be, again, more constitutional work. We were with the Bosnians at Dayton doing the constitution there. Oftentimes the clients come to us through, oddly enough, recommendations of other clients because we've been known out there in the community of doing the peace negotiations because there is no competition. No one else does pro bono legal work on peace negotiations or constitutions. When a state, the Sri Lankans came to us through the Australians. The Sri Lankan peace negotiator was a former Australian diplomat, and he rang up the former Australian foreign minister, who was the head of the International Crisis Group, and said, yeah, don't tell anybody, but we need some lawyers. And Sri Lanka's concern was the LTTE had been to all five previous rounds of the peace negotiations, and they were a brand new government. But they can't really announce that, hey, we're the government, we don't know how to do peace talks. So they went through the Australians rang us up, and then we went to Sri Lanka and started working with the government there on the peace process. The same thing with Nepal. It was the South Africans who put the Nepalese onto PILPG for work with their post-conflict constitution. So it's an interesting, you wouldn't think about it, but there is a community of those out there in the post-conflict and peace negotiations world. And then in the war crimes world, it's because Mike Scharf runs our war crimes project area, and he's so well known in the field of war crimes work that there's this group of about half a dozen or so, Ambassador Sheffer, Mike Newton, Mike Scharf, who are the go-to people with Wedgwood on war crimes issues. And so Michael gets most of it that way. We also have a situation where Michael teaches a case, and I have been teaching long enough that a lot of our alumni are in these situations. So the deputy prosecutor for the Lebanon Tribunal is one of Mike's former students. So it was a natural choice for them to reach out to Mike and to PILPG to do the war crimes work. And in Georgia, one of our LLM alumni was in their Ministry of Justice and vouched for us when the Georgians were looking for someone to advise them on their peace process. So it really is, we don't solicit, we don't advertise, but we're available to do this type of work. We have a very strict vetting process in order to select the client ultimately.
Yeah. So when you make a new client or just conduct business with an existing client, is there often a need to send a representative of the organization overseas, or is almost all or a lot of the work just done?
We spend a lot of our time on the road. We have offices In most of the places where we've had clients, when there's Matt spent 4 months in Doha doing the peace talks, he's scheduled to go back next week. In Juba, we have the office there, but Vanessa goes back and forth. I spent most of the winter break in southern Sudan helping to prepare for the legal issues for the referendum. One of our key aspects is we put briefcases on the ground. Been in our fair share of conflict areas. We've spent a little bit of time in the duck and cover bunkers in various places, but it's lawyers getting out there on the ground, which makes us different than a think tank or a policy institute or an academic enterprise providing legal assistance. We just sent our New York office. We have two people full-time in Kenya, but we've sent somebody from our New York office, Anna Tripanel, who used to work at Jones Day, doing international mergers and acquisitions out to Kenya for 2 months, because they're doing a push both on the International Criminal Court issues as well as in implementing a new constitution. And we needed to augment our resources there, so we sent her out there. The other part of our signature is getting those briefcases on the ground, being members of delegations.
Yeah. How do students get their assignments? They get to choose, and then our students stay here.
Yeah, the students do not travel because the university shouted at me very loudly about a decade ago when I sent a student to Kosovo, who is still there. maybe that's why they were so mad. She never came back. She now works for the embassy there, but before that OSCE, and before that she was our office director. Before that, she was one of my students who I sent there for the summer. So the students don't travel because of the university's insurance concerns and all that, but we do look to get the alumni on these law fellow positions overseas, and then, as I said, almost all of our overseas folks, unless we've hired foreign nationals for a particular reason, are associated either with Case Western or with American University. When you're selected into the program, an email will go around saying, "Look, these are the clients that we anticipate having next year. Our current clients, and we've some that may be coming on board. You pick your top three, and then the senior research associates do a draft, and out of that pool, I think the last 2-3 years, everyone's gotten one of their top three. And then also things change and evolve. Kosovo has just come back on, and Bosnia has just come back on as clients, but they weren't clients in the fall. Nepal has been going strong for 3 years, but now Nepal is going to enter a hiatus probably until it picks up in the summer. So there is some, like a law firm, clients ebb and they flow. And then as the projects conclude, you'll be on a team. So Martina's team is Uganda, Kosovo, Southern Cameroon. So all that work product goes to her team. So she has that practice area. We then have a Kenya team. We have a Darfur team. We have a Southern Sudan team. And they all have other secondary and tertiary clients as well, but all that work goes into those teams, so you're not bouncing around. You're able to roll out on your resume in a job talk downtown and say, "I work on the Southern Sudan team for PILPG," and you're steeped in what's happening in Southern Sudan vis-a-vis state succession referendum. And then they've also now asked us to help them on their new constitution after July. So you've got a portfolio that you can talk about and that you can write about. Another question? Yes. And then back there.
Does student work continue during the summer at all, or is it strictly confined to
the student work does continue over the summer, and the teams will put students on call, and sometimes the students can do it for units. Sometimes there's only a little bit of work. There's various ways of handling the summer workload. And it changes a little bit every year as PLPG continues to grow what resources we have and what clients are highly active at the time. So there is some summer work, but it's been manageable these last few years. Yeah, back there.
Where do you get your funding from?
We have an eclectic array of funding. It's most of it is pro bono assistance from the law firms. We also we were nurtured at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace after I left the University of Cambridge. I was a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment, so they supported us. And then we had a Carnegie Corporation grant. We have some Canadian money, some State Department, and some AID resources, and some private trust foundations that will do specific projects. But we are probably only 20% dependent on funding. We've designed the organization in such a way that if tomorrow all the funding went away, it would still continue in a different form. And probably for the first 7-8 years, we operated off of $10,000 a year because of in-kind sharing and office space and contributions and things along those lines. We have our office downtown in part because one of our law firm partners needed to rent an entire floor to do a document review. And they went in and they said, oh, and by the way, can you give this plucky little NGO the group discount rate that we're getting for the office? The law firm has long since left, but we signed a long-term agreement. And so we've got this, we have swanky space down on 16th Street next to the Hay Adams. Between H and I, and only because the whole floor was rented out by this law firm, and then we're the ones that are left now. So that type of, we do a lot of that type of partnering and in-kind contributions. And we have agreements with a number of our law firms to use their overseas offices. Our Dutch office, based out of The Hague, is operated out of Amsterdam University, but it uses Baker McKenzie's brand new office space, which is a bit of a downside, because as the clients wander in, the Southern Cameroons, we've met there, the Nagas of Nagaland, and they're like, you're not going to send us a bill, are you? Because it's really it's in South Amsterdam, and it's in the financial district, and it's a swanky law firm space that you'd expect. And we're like, no, we're hoping you don't send us a bill for the team because we can afford it. But we've done a very good job of building those types of relationships for in-kind contributions. In part because Michael and I started this as faculty members, and we wanted it to be able to continue and not become a traditional nonprofit where you're always struggling for the next funding source. But having these funding sources allows us to put long-term briefcases on the ground, which is primarily where the resources go to. Yeah?
How and when does the application process start?
There should be this piece of paper, and I'm going to defer to Martina since she's on the hiring committee. Do you guys have this piece? Okay.
So basically, I think the info sessions are down at the bottom. We have the hours. And the applications will be released on February 14th. Valentine's Day, sorry guys. But they're not due that day. They're due on February 25th. And then we go through them fairly quickly, and then there's a long process of doing in-person interviews. You'll be interviewed by a panel of three or four current senior research associates and research associates. And then after that, we'll send out offers. And so you should, it's a fairly quick process, so you should know.
Our plan, we're the first application, and we're the first offers. So we get our offers out before the clinic and the other large organizations, so that you can make that decision early on. And we have a list somewhere of what you can and can't do with the LPG. So you can do law review, human rights brief, NPI-LPG, but not clinic in NPI-LPG, because we've had conflicts of clients, conflict clients with that, because we share some of our clients with the clinic. The Bushmen and a few others we've shared, which is great, and they do wonderful work. But then we end up with students already early in your legal careers getting conflicts. We are also client-driven, and clinic is client-driven. And when your client's got a problem, you got to be there for them. Law review, you can get an extension if you can talk your senior editor into doing it. Human rights brief as well, a little bit. So it's fair. No one's ever really had a problem, and we are very flexible because we realize you're going to want to do seven or eight different things over the next couple of years. So Dean's Fellows position, the Marshall Brennan position, those are all consistent with also doing PILPG. But we do get our offers out early so that you can then make those calculations and act on it. Yeah. Six units in the fall, six units in the spring. And then if you do SRA, you roll into the third year as well.
But you'll also know which team you are on by the end of the year. So you'll have your orientation and everything. You'll know what to expect before the school year even begins next.
So. Do an intensive two-day orientation program. And then I mentioned we have our professional development. Instead of having class, and I should mention that's the class, there's no real class. There's no paper, there's no final, there's no reading, there's no nothing. We come together in the fall every week for an hour and a half, and then in the spring every other week for a professional development, which is designed to add 3 to 5 years to your professional life. We talk about getting downtown. We talk about programs. We're having someone come in 2 weeks to talk about how alumni who has a Presidential Management Fellowship at USAID who just designed a new dashboard, which brings together all of the different funding agencies, and she's actually briefed Secretary Clinton on it. She's going to come in and brief the students on it. The idea being that when they go down on the job market, they can talk the talk of, USAID, CMM, conflict mitigation funding, or, USAID, DG, democracy and governance funding, or, DRL, over the State Department, democracy, rights, and labor, as a resource stream. Not that you'll know how to get a grant, but that you'll be able to talk the talk. And in an interview process, it's like, whoa, okay, we got a second or third year law student here who gets that this nonprofit that they're interviewing with, whatever you're interviewing with, gets that there's a State Department resource. The F Bureau is a brand new bureau. It's built bridging the funding between USAID and state to at least nod and acknowledge that they know what that means, to know that there's an IQC that is worth $400 million, and what is an indefinite quantity contract. So that there's, again, adding 3 to 5 years so that you can be different than everyone else. I did legal rhetoric. I'm on law review and I get good grades. Please hire me, because everybody else is doing that. So there's a little bit of that type of work. We do how to do a television interview, because you won't be doing it next semester, but at some point in your life, you'll be on TV, and you'll be like, this is not at all what I expected. How does this thing work? So we talk about how to do media interviews and things like that. But again, it's not, so all of the thinking and all of the work is on the client products. Other? Yeah.
The info sessions might give you a more in-depth view of what all the different clients do, because we'll have representatives from the different teams. So it won't only just be me, you'll also have people from Darfur, South Sudan, or our Kenya, Tanzania teams. So it might be useful, but we also will cover a lot of the same information.
The coffee hours would be good for you guys. The coffee hours in my office, room 400, I've turned it over to the students, it has a little coffee machine in it, and a candy bowl, and it'll be sitting down, 3 or 4 or 5 of you, around the table with a couple of senior research associates having a coffee, talking more in much more detail about it. So swing by the info sessions if you can, but think also about the coffee hours. They're designed to be really informal and for you to have an in-depth conversation with the current RAs and SRAs.
And if there is a client specifically that we've mentioned that you might be more interested in, to make sure that they're at the coffee hours, you can just email me. So I'll put my email up on the board, and you can just let me know so that we make sure that you get all the information you want.
And one of the things we do with our RAs is we give them all PILPG.org email addresses. So when you're engaging in your professional correspondence downtown, not only do you have the business card, but you also have a PILPG address, and then we have a set signature line at the bottom, this research associate, Public International Law and Policy Group. It's all part of that effort to get you ahead of the pack of the other 1,200 law students that are graduating the same year you are, to have had this experience, to be different, to get on people's radar.
I'm actually already on here, down at the bottom. I'm the one with the really long name, Martina. Plus your shop
goes down. How do you say that?
Plus your shop.
That's what I thought. Other questions? I know we're holding you over time, but any other questions? Okay. We're around. There's always someone in room 400. The coffee machine and the candy jar, so don't be shy about also just dropping by. If you catch anybody in room 400, just asking any follow-up questions with them.
European transitional justice.
Rebecca Hamilton.